good morning once again.
We keep doing this.
I was going to say something along those same lines. This is feeling very, very familiar and not really repetitive because we are shaking things up a bit. But
trying to.
Yeah. We are cranking through them. Mm-hmm. My goodness.
So, well, what with the looming first vacation in 3 years. Vacation.
Yeah.
So, and second vacation.
Yeah. Yes. A vacation from the day to day, followed by a vacation from Saturday.
Correct. Yes.
And then the third one, when it all comes crashing down, when we all show up.
Yep.
No one understands any of this.
No, they won't.
That's
no.
Okay. Personal crap getting in the way of the podcast.
Yeah, right.
Okay, gang. Fun times in the in our shared family going on at the moment. But we're going to dive into makerspace today.
We are, yes. My favorite topics.
Fun. You made up. You know, I always accuse you of making up words.
Yes, you do.
I do. And this time you actually did make up a word.
I did. I had to come up with a term that describes what I do. You know, everybody has hobbies, stuff that they like to do. As everyone knows, you like to play trivia and drink beer. Mm-hmm. So
I suspect I'm not alone in those.
Probably not. Other people like to, watch and play sports. Other people like to blah, 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 blah. I make stuff. Mm-hmm. And people are like, oh, really? What do you make? Are you like a woodworker? Or are you like a car restorer? What do you do? I'm like, no, I make stuff.
You make people cry.
Like, well, that. But like, what kind of stuff? Anything. What do you mean anything? Yeah, if it's a physical thing, I'll make it. Or I'll fix it, right? And I'm trying to figure out a way to describe what I do. What is it that I do? Am I a fabricator? No, I'm not that artsy-fartsy with it, right? I'm very practical, and then I like to use things that I already have, as opposed to like going out and buying new stuff, like raw materials or components and stuff. Mm-hmm. But I'm taking more effort in designing and building and manipulating whatever it is I'm making than just like something that's quote cobbled together. So I came up with a new term. I'm a fabric cobbler.
A fabric cobbler.
Yeah. I'm half fabricator, half cobbler. But not like cobbler in terms of shoes, but pursuant to an episode like number 6, everyone knows I have my own cobbler.
I was going to go there. I can't believe you beat me to it. That's the way back machine there. If anyone remembers way the cobbler machine. Situation.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Wow.
So, yes, I am a fabric cobbler. And so
fabric cobbler.
When I was thinking about the list of skills that really paid off for me in hop growing was my considerable repertoire of fabric cobbling talents. And I think there's some hop growers out there now that are nodding their heads right now. They're like, oh, yeah, I got that. Sometimes it's called farm engineering. And when you let Dan Detmers get involved, it's usually held together with duct tapes and wire. I tend to take a little more pride in my work than that. But yeah, so I wanted to talk about fabric cobbling on the hop yard today and things that I did that people commonly might run into. And I just thought I'd talk about the tools and techniques one might want to learn if they want to successfully fabric cobble on their hop yard.
Fabric cobble. Mm-hmm. I have to ask, just to give folks a little more insight into whatever the hell's going on your shoulders. When you talk about that you build things and you put things together, are you typically looking to build something in order to automate something, to solve a problem, to do something for you? Or is it sometimes just, I wonder if just for giggles I could make this happen?
Yes, on all cases.
All cases.
On all fronts. Okay. during the hop production years and having the farm, it was almost solely to solve an issue on the farm, to mechanize. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. It fed my soul as well. But in my retirement years, I find myself making things that have absolutely no purpose but are really cool. Things that nobody should really know how to make and have access to make. I should have a YouTube channel, but because it's fun, it's the problem-solving aspect that's really fun for me, whether that's restoring old stuff that people throw out and be like, this is garbage anymore. You tear it apart, you're like, it's missing a fuse. and you put it back together and you sell it, which I've told that's how I used to fund early Gorse Valley days. I don't know. That's what it is. But it's partly it's broken. It needs fixed. Or people are like, this is really weird. I'm not sure it can be fixed, but I bet you James can fix it. And, you know, I have the workshop full of tools to allow me to do so. But it's like a challenge.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's a degree to which this is challenge accepted.
Exactly. Like, mm-hmm. But I've always been interested in this. My grandfather and his grandfather and blah, 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 back through umpteen generations were all makers of some sort, mostly woodworkers. Some of them were shipwrights. And I grew up in a workshop, and in most cases, a wood shop. But I grew up around tools my entire life. And a doting grandfather that I'm so thankful for having taught me a lot of these skills. But that's how I think now. I think in terms of 3D physical space, right? And that really served me well in hop production, because as we all know, there's precious little in the way of equipment on the market for especially hops.
Sure.
We talked just not too long ago about carping and crowning, and you know, yeah, you can buy this piece of equipment, it's about $10,000, and you can buy this, it's, you know, $15,000 or whatever, and like they're available in the North American market now. They weren't 15 years ago. Nothing, you couldn't get a hold of any of that stuff unless you actually went to Europe, found some old codger that wasn't using one because they stopped growing hops, you know, 25 years ago, and you could pick it up used. Aside from that, you couldn't really find anything. Now there's a pretty healthy used market for this stuff, but it's like, okay, I know I need this, and it's a roadblock for me. How am I going to get past it? Mm-hmm. Well, you build it yourself, or you pay somebody else to do it for you. And I was going to be damned if I was going to have somebody else do it, because I love doing that stuff.
Right. Right. And of course, some of these things, I mean, we found this with harvesters over time. Sometimes there's a reason why these things don't exist.
That's true.
But yeah, the flip side, I love your example of just someone was going to throw this away and the fuse is blown, and that's all that it is. There are, we've talked many times about the fact that when you start laying out the personnel you need when you're starting up your farm, you got to have someone, whether it's you or someone else, who knows how to tinker with shit.
Yep. You've got to know, at least be comfortable with taking something that already exists and knowing how it comes apart and being able to put it back together.
Because they all break on Fridays at 4:30.
They all break on Fridays, and you will never have all the parts that you need, and you will never have enough time to do it. So, I mean, there's like different levels of skill sets that one needs, and it's not like I need to know it all, otherwise I'm not going to be successful. That's not the case. Mm-hmm. It's you know, you can have varying degrees of these mechanical skill sets. And know how far they go.
Sure.
And so I thought we could talk about some of the skills that one might want to build themselves in order to allow them more degrees of freedom to not rely on other people to do some simple repairs.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, me too.
Well, which I said that when you suggested the episode. Yes. I don't need any further validation than that.
Tinker away.
And you got to make up a word that I'm not going to yell at you for making up words.
Yeah, fabric hobbling.
Fabric hobbling.
Mm-hmm.
That needs to go on a t-shirt, of course.
Yep. I think I got to get that tattooed on my forearm.
I thought that was heading toward forehead, but yes, forearm. Oh. Forearm better. Forearm is better.
It's more socially acceptable. Yeah. Mm-hmm. First skill, and this is going to be really, people are going to be like, really? You're going to talk about why? Doesn't everybody know how to do this? No, they don't. Is knowing how to use basic hand power tools, like an impact driver or a screw gun or anything like that. We had numerous people that came through our farm that had, you know, on their resumes, things I was looking for was experience building stuff, whether it be birdhouses and, you know, or whatnot to whatever, you know, like, hey, yeah, I used to build houses with, you know, in the summertime or whatever, because I needed those skill sets. I knew that I wanted those team members to have some basic repair skills so they didn't have to come find me all the time. Mm-hmm. And what I found was that while they may have built said things, no one taught them any skills, like how to properly pick up an impact driver and use it. Hmm. And I don't know if those of you don't know what an impact driver is. It looks like a screw gun, you know, like a power drill, but it goes, you know, and it, instead of just screwing something in one smooth motion, it uses these rapid little jerks to drive screws into wood or into metal or whatnot. And they're more powerful than a screw gun.
Yeah. Yeah. Almost feels like anti-lock brakes.
Yep.
And you know, it's a really good point, and I'll speak from the, you know, in my day perspective, because my daughter is 14. She doesn't know how to get from here to there. You know, she's 14. But she was recently in a play, and she ended up on the crew in addition to being on stage. And she came home one day and said, "Oh yeah, I used a circular saw today." And I was like, "You what?" Now, it turned out what she used was a miter saw. It took a little bit of digging to determine, because I said a circular saw. They just had you, and she's like, "Well, no, it's connected to a table." I said, "Okay, well, that's not a circular saw. Was it a table saw? How did you use it?" And I had to whittle down quite literally to what the answer was. But she ended up learning how to use a lot of basic hand tools that a kid her age, and I'll put my bias in here, especially a girl her age, just is never handed for any particular reason. There's no shop class anymore in high school. They don't do it.
Right.
So those are important. I can now – I was getting on her case the other day because I'm like, okay, what kind of screwdriver do I need for that? She goes, it's the star-shaped – I'm like, no, there's a name for it.
Yeah. Dad, jeez. So boring. Mm-hmm. I had that for my grandfather, not for my father. He didn't know which end of the hammer to use. But the same thing about cars, too. I remember him trying to tell me about cars, and I'm just like, really? No, that doesn't work that way. But yeah, so I'd have these young people come through the farm, and they'd pick up an impact driver. You know, I'm like, okay, let's say we're building a prototype Oast or something out of wood, and we'd be putting it together, and they'd be all eager to do it, and I just hear nothing but like grinding screw heads. I'm like, what are you doing? And like, the screw won't go in. I'm like, okay. So then, you know, I'd have to tell them, I'll get all of your force in line from your shoulder to your elbow to your wrist, and, you know, teaching them technique. And as soon as you do that, it's like zip, goes right in. Like, oh, nobody ever showed me that before. And it starts off with those little skill sets, because I think it's those experiences that dissuade people and discourage them from trying to do this stuff.
Oh, sure.
It's because they'll pick up a tool, they're already slightly intimidated, and then they think they should just automatically know how to use it. And that's not the case.
No, and especially something like that, you're right. How discouraging is it when the first three times you pick one of those up, you strip the head, and you've got to, you know, get someone to help you pull that out and fix the problem, which is a pain in the ass.
And a little embarrassing sometimes.
And it's embarrassing too, certainly.
Yep. So don't be intimidated by these things. They're tools. They are machines. They are there to help you. But in some cases, such as a true circular saw, or even a miter saw, it will cut your fingers off. Tools are to be respected, but they are to also be used. And there are even business partners of ours that would come to the farm, and they would absolutely not pick up a circular saw because they're terrified of it.
And you know what? If you're terrified of it and you don't understand the proper safety precautions, you have no business picking it up.
Correct.
So we all know. You give me plenty of grief about the Boy Scout stuff that I'm involved in. Every single merit badge, there are 140-something merit badges out there. Every single one, part one of that merit badge is safety.
Yeah.
Even like astronomy has a safety precaution at the beginning. Like every single one has
a safety. Don't get your eye too close to the ocular. Just be careful. You know, you get some bruises.
Don't go hiking up to the top of the hill at night by yourself to go look at the stars. I don't know. I don't know what the safety precaution is for that one. But you know, don't look at the sun directly.
Telescopes do not make appropriate defense weapons against black bears.
You know, that's a fair one too. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, safety is paramount on all of these things. So yes, understand how these things work, but trial and error is not the way to understand how these things
correct. Correct. Usually not. Technically, I think this is one word, but it sounds like we pronounce it as two words. I was going to say, I'll give you one word, one place to go to even learn and refresh the most basic skill sets YouTube. When using tools, YouTube.
Yeah, YouTube's fantastic.
Absolutely. And there's no shame in it. My 84-year-old mother goes to YouTube to learn how to use her power drill.
Nice.
You can do it too.
You go, Donna.
Yep. So that's how it roll. That's how we roll in the Altwise household.
Yep. Well, and I've told the story before. You know, I'm not nearly as mechanical as you. I'm really, I would consider myself not mechanical, but I'm more so than a decent number of people. I've told the story many times where I was ready to throw away my snowblower about 6 years ago, and I said, I'll give it one last shot. And I opened up YouTube, and I learned how to clean out the carburetor, and I took 2 hours, and that puppy's still running.
Yep, exactly. And that's the sort of stuff I love, because I'll see that sort of stuff sitting out. I live out in the country, and you know, there's the curb at the end of the driveway could be a quarter mile long from the house, and there'll be stuff sitting there. I'll be like, slowing down. Why is that sitting in the garbage? Yoink, in the back of the vehicle, and away we go. Mm-hmm. And lo and behold, it works. And then it goes for sale on Craigslist or Facebook Marketplace. Just polish those skills and know that for really all these things I'm going to be talking about, skill set wise for fabric cobbling, go to YouTube.
Sure.
It's there. There's an entire environment, ecosystem of makers on YouTube that do things from the wicked complex to the super basic and fundamental. I spend most of my entertainment time. I don't watch TV. I watch YouTube because that's the content that I really like. It's a great resource. I would say second to the power tool and just hand tool familiarity. Next skill set that came in, I can't tell you, it's like breathing at this point for me, is welding. And that intimidates the shit out of me.
I was going to say, that feels like a big jump from hand tools.
Nope. I'm not talking industrial structural steel welding. I'm not talking about excavator repair, although I do watch those on YouTube. I'm talking about what we call hobby welding or farm welding. And literally, it's a machine. It's called a wire feed welder. Sometimes people call them MIG welders, M-I-G. But it's a wire feed welder. And what this thing does is uses electricity to, this is going to sound terrifying, create a short circuit to melt wire, this metal wire, onto your metal substrate, steel. And you're basically gluing steel together. And it's freaking black magic. And it's awesome. It works really simply. And these little welders, they're 110 volt. You can get them, plug them right into your outlet. There's no special anything involved. Yes, you do wear a special hood, an auto darkening one for those of you who aren't keen on poking around in the dark until you strike an arc. But, you know, these little hobby welders don't require any extra external gases. Everything you need is in this wire. And it is perfect for repairing light gauge metal. And let's say you're using, you know, the blade on your hoe falls off. Right? Oh, crap. Now what am I going to do? Weld it. Go weld it back together. I need a fork to stake twine into the ground. I need more of them. You know, if you've got a little hobby welder and some scrap steel laying around, you've got yourself a fork. And the number of times that I can't even tell you how many times I've picked up that welding gun in my adult life. It's ridiculous. But I taught myself how to do this by YouTube.
See, welding to me looks like one of those things that you need a license.
Well, it is. Like if you're welding structural steel or, the Large Hadron Collider. But you're trying to put the blade back on your hoe, it'll be okay.
Yeah, I suppose that's true.
And they're not expensive. I mean, comparatively, in the world of tools, you can, for a couple of $100, you can go to someplace even like Harbor Freight in North America, which is like cheapo depot for tools, and get a small wire feed welder. I have two of them from Harbor Freight. And one of them is my heavier duty one that takes 100 or 220 volts. I've had that thing for 15 years and it's still going strong.
Okay, so put it on the calendar. When I come out next month to visit you, I want to try welding something.
You got it.
Excellent. There will be pictures.
There will be pictures. It's super.
And medical bills.
And, yeah. Just don't stick it in your eye or in your yin yang. You'll be okay.
That's pretty much the first rule of safety for all of us.
Yeah, pretty much. Keep this out of yin yang. What's that little Bar Sinister symbol and the instructions look like for that?
Oh, that would be awesome.
Yeah, welder. Get yourself a welder. But there's a partner tool to a welder that one has to have. And I would even argue one needs before they get a welder, which is an angle grinder. And an angle grinder is a handheld power tool. They're pretty popular battery now, but I like the corded ones because they're more powerful. But it spins these discs, and those discs are anywhere between 4 inches, and you can get angle grinders that go all the way up to 9 inches. But for those of the people I'm talking to now, the 4, 4.5 inch ones would be fine. And it spins this abrasive wheel at high speeds, and you cut steel with it, or any metal. Or you take that blade off and you put a different one on, and you can cut concrete and masonry. You take that off, you put a sanding disc on it, and now you've got a high-speed grinder sander. So works really, really great. And this is a tool that one would use to clean up, like, rusty metal before you weld it. Right? You put a sanding disc on it, and you polish it up to bright metal, and then boom, away you go. Or you want to cut a small, you know, hunk of metal off of a bigger hunk of metal, then you use this thing and you make the trim, but it's abrasive and it cuts through pretty much anything. They are cheap. They are wicked awesome. I have 4 of them because, you know, one's got a cutoff wheel on it, abrasive, one's got a sanding disc on it, one's got a wire wheel on it, because like when you're doing serious fabrication, you need all that stuff and you don't want to waste a bunch of time
changing them out,
right? So you just have different ones. And I mean, honestly, you can get even these things used on like Craigslist or Facebook Marketplace for like $30. And there's very little to go wrong with them. Huh. And again, I've had mine for decades. And I think I've replaced the motor brushes in it once.
Wow.
In one of them. So super duper easy. Get yourself, if you don't have angle grinders, get a half a dozen. Get a gross. I mean, they're just cheaper by the dozen.
And it's funny, just for general home maintenance, I've got a ton of tools around here. That is one that I do not have.
That is probably the single most used tool in our household.
Really?
Yeah. For, you know, granted, again, country boy, but the kind of stuff that we do around here, we do a lot of masonry work around our house, like decorative masonry work. And you put a diamond blade on that angle grinder and you're zipping through stone and concrete like it's butter.
Huh.
And so we use it all the time. My wife hates it.
Loud?
Yes. She's like, you're not using that machine again, are you? Or does this require that machine? That's her determination of whether or not she's actually going to attempt doing it or not. Nice. Like, I know that needs fixed, but if I have to use that machine, I'm going to live with it the way it is. It spins at thousands of RPMs. I mean, it's a screamer, but it's like magic. Huh. I love it.
Interesting. I mean, I have a Dremel, but it's a much, much smaller version of what you're talking about here.
That's exactly right. It is. And that's something that we would call a Dremel tool is what we would call a die grinder. Okay. Where a die grinder and an angle grinder are similar spinny, whiny things. But the die grinder has the blade or the whatever it is you're using is turning perpendicular to the long axis of the tool.
Mm-hmm.
An angle grinder, the blade of the disc is turning parallel with the long axis of the tool. So there's like a 90 degree offset.
Right. I actually have an angle attachment on my Dremel, so I can change it to that.
Yep, exactly.
But that's much more for, I don't know, Pinewood Derby cars and little detail work. Although
I'll use the same principle.
I use the cutoff head to deal with, you know, stripped screws.
I have a Dremel in the shop, of course, as you might expect.
Oh, sure.
I use it in my fabricating work all the time because it's the right size.
Yeah.
Power has nothing to do with it. I mean, if you're going to use that Dremel, would that Dremel hack through a 3/8 inch thick piece of plate steel? Yes. It would take a while, but it would. So that's what the angle grinder's for. or, you know, the plasma cutter.
Oh, boy.
Cutting steel with lightning. Yes, please. Anyway. So, yeah, welder and angle grinder are a match made in heaven. Literally, it's like, give me those two things and I can pretty much build whatever you need.
Yeah, one tears things apart, one puts them back together again. What more
pretty
do you
much.
Need?
And that's the lovely thing about steel versus working with wood or something like that, is like, if you screw it up, cut it apart and do it again. Mm-hmm. With wood, you make that cut, you're done.
Yeah, that's true.
So I very much appreciate the material. Uh-huh. And then obviously you can get people like, well, can I weld aluminum with this? Sort of. Aluminum's a whole different beast, and we're going to talk about that. But just know that most of what you're dealing with is steel, and one of these little hobby welders would do well by having one around your farm or even your garage. It's fun. It's good times. If you're comfy with hand tools and you've got a reasonable collection of them, including, you know, hand power tools, and you've got yourself a welder and an angle grinder, you've tackled, I'm going to say, 75% of the tasks that you need to do on your hop yard. You're ready to go. There are other things, though, that are a ton of fun.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm honestly, before you jump into those, I'm just interested in I'm fascinated by the fact that you have four angle grinders, not because I don't have one and you have four, and I feel like there's a dichotomy here, but
hey, I have no saxophones and you have like six.
I do have four saxophones, so that does, yeah. The balance is there. That is
exactly
true. That is true. I will never forget being out years ago with our father-in-law. I don't know what I needed. A pair of vice grips, I think, is what I was looking for. We're at Sears, and I do not come from a family of people that know how to put things together or take things apart. They know how to pick up the phone and call someone.
Mm-hmm.
So he our father-in-law looked at me and said, "You know how I know if I need a tool?" I'm like, "How?" He said, "If I look at the tool and say, I don't have one of these at home."
I like that.
Yeah. It makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I have inherited over the years from my two grandfathers piles of tools. I have so much in terms of automotive tools and whatnot, but to your point earlier, I had no one to teach me.
Mm-hmm.
So I figured this stuff out on the fly, or I call you and go, what does this do?
Yep. That's awesome. Tools are awesome.
They're fun.
Tools are part of what makes humans humans and not monkeys.
And the old ones are better than the new ones, but we could get into long discussions about
them. Oh, yes, we could.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We won't go down that old man path.
That's a different podcast.
Mm-hmm.
All together. Now I'm thinking about my four angle grinders.
Oh, gee. You can only hold two at a time.
Angle grinders beat saxophone.
Well, in a pure physical battle, yes, without question.
Yeah, true. Right. But I think saxophones are more lyrical than the ear-splitting, teeth grinding whine of a
I was going to say no one has ever said, does it involve that tool, but but there are, you know, when you get Kenny G involved, there are people who are going to go, does it involve that tool?
Oh, true. That is true.
So yes. You know, to each his own. Some may prefer the sound of an angle grinder.
This is true.
All right, what's next?
Getting comfy with those things will put you in a really, really good place to tackle, like I said, 75% to 80%, the lion's share of the challenges that one is going to face in any specialty agriculture field. The other thing, though, as we get slightly deeper into the world of fabric cowling, is usually as we those skill sets really start to need to go up a notch when you're talking now suddenly you have several acres and you're in the world of really the necessity of mechanization. You've gone from hand labor to tractor labor, and much of what you are going to want to do on your yard, you're going to find requires specialty equipment to do it. Where's that coming from? And it doesn't have to be crazy, you know, 8 hydraulic pumps and all sorts of automated stuff. It could be something very simple, like you know, fabricating a what we call a toolbar that goes on the back of a tractor on the three-point hitch that one attaches all sorts of pointy things to, like a ripper. And you could go out and buy a toolbar, and it's going to cost you several hundred dollars, if not thousands of dollars, to get into a toolbar. Or you can make one with the aforementioned tools that I talked about. That sort of thing is absolutely within the grasp of the small-scale hop grower with reasonable skill in using those tools. Absolutely. The other thing that those tools and skills are going to come in handy for as you grow into that new acreage is repairing equipment, more so than fabricating new equipment.
Oh, sure. Well, I would make the argument that a lot of what you did wasn't fix things back to their original state, but fabricate them into a new species.
A lot of that did occur. Mm-hmm. My Franken potato digger that I had to dig rhizomes, that was awesome.
Yes.
It looked like a instrument of war, but it worked great. Yeah, fixing stuff, like stuff on the tractor, stuff on various wagons. I remember one time, it's like they were towing one of our flatbed wagons back from the field full of hops, and the wheel fell off. I was just like, it was an old farm wagon I picked up for like $50, right? Put a new bed on it, and lo and behold, one of the axle bearings was shot, and it let loose of the axle, and it fell off. The wheel fell off. And so they're like, what are we going to do? Oh, my God. Boy. You know, and it's like, we needed that. We needed it now. And I don't have time to go run to the farm fleet or the implement dealer and buy a new axle bearing and spend half a day putting it back together. I welded that sucker in there. Like four heavy-duty tack welds. And I'm like, that will get us through what we need to get through. And then when we're done with it, when we're done with that task, then you get out the trusty angle grinder and you grind those welds down, you pop it out and you fix it proper. And that's the sort of thing that can make the difference between, and literally in this case, getting that harvest done or not was my understanding of how to use a welder. And it's that simple.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're not talking about, I'm not going to be building stuff. I'm not going to be doing all that fabric cobbling, James. Yeah, but can you afford to not have those skills? I mean, just knowing that, even with a reasonable, you know, 2 hours worth of YouTube tutorials and playing around with it, you know, with some scrap metal somewhere, is going to teach you a lot. So just shut up and do it.
I was just going to say, I mean, it's your point about is harvest going to happen or not. I mean, that's really what happens here. It becomes I wasn't kidding about the things happen at Friday at 4:30 situation.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to have these, I hate to call them basic skills, because when you talk about angle grinders and welding, I go, that's not basic skills, but they are basic skills if you're going to be in this business.
Yes, I would say they're a basic skill set of being a specialty crop farmer.
Yeah, I mean, look,
you need to know how to do this.
You built your own electrical panel for the greenhouse. That's not something everyone needs to know how to do.
No. People don't need to be like all up in relays and timers and yeah. No, yeah. That's all James geeking out over the stuff he likes.
Right.
It's the basic skill sets that are going to save your bacon time and again.
Right.
And they're gonna open up an entirely new world for you. As a small farm owner and say, I can fix that or I can do that. And then pretty soon after you get done or after you're comfy with fixing stuff, you're going to be like, I bet I can make that. And you start looking at things like you start looking at your tractor. You'd be like, well, that thing has a hydraulic pump on it. Right. And there's a fitting. So, and then you start reading up and watching YouTubes on hydraulics. And then pretty soon you're like, I bet all I need to do is get an old hydraulic motor and some hose, and I can have a spinny bit over here. And lo and behold, spinny bit it is. And that's what happened to me. That's how I got where I got, to the point where I'm building things like propane flame weeders that mount to the front of my tractor, basically, so I don't have to till and destroy the soil, and I don't have to spray a bunch of herbicides when I don't need to. Now I have a propane weeder that is on a hydraulic shift so I can move it in and out between plants. And it took me a Saturday to build it.
And is that something you can even buy?
I bet you could buy parts of it. And so if you didn't want to build it from scratch, which I did, you could buy parts and fabric cobble it together. Absolutely. But in some other cases, no, they don't exist. And that's, you know, then once your skill set gets, you know, polished enough, you're like, yeah, this thing doesn't exist, but it would solve this problem. Mm-hmm. And I can make it. Or at least make part of it and know somebody else who can help me finish it. Because you'll find if you really are interested in making, you're going to be in it for all of about 6 days, and you're going to find this community that they just want to help each other. And they'll be like, I can do that for you. Or do it like this, and here, put this here. And then now you've got something that was built by community, and nobody asked for anything.
Yeah, and that's a relatively new phenomenon. That didn't exist for, you know, a generation ago.
Oh, no. Nope, it didn't.
Or 10, 15 years ago, for that matter. You all you had were your local neighbors to get together and ask, but that's a limited set right there.
And I remember as a child in the 70s, early 70s, that I remember neighbors coming to my grandfather, or, you know, they'd be out at the grocery store or whatnot, or people be stopping them after church or whatever it was, and they'd be like, come on, let's go, right? And they knew he could fix stuff. Mm-hmm. And so it would be, and he was retired by that point, but it's like in his basement workshop, there'd be something down there. I remember one day there's a television down there. I'm like, what are you doing? You know, I'm like, are you making a TV? He's like, no, something's wrong with it. He's a woodworker, right? But he was a maker at heart, right? My mother called him a tinkerer because he liked to understand how things work. And of course, back in that day, some of those TVs still had tubes in them.
Sure.
And it was, yeah, flip, flip. Blown vacuum tube, just replace that, and boom. Because we went up to the hardware store and bought a vacuum tube from a guy that was 9,000 years old.
I'm sure he seemed that way at your age.
Exactly, yeah. Yep. And I can still remember the smell of that hardware store.
I'm sure.
Oh, God. Yeah, it's going to open up a whole new world for people. And you'll start to look at some of these other pieces of equipment. And I remember Dan tells this story, Dan Detmers, about when he and I were talking to his wife and my wife about this thing. And there's an episode of Dirty Jobs with Mike Rowe, and where Mike goes out west to a hop harvest, and he's asking people, and Dan's wife was watching this with us, and he was asking people about, well, where do you get this piece of equipment? He's like, oh, we got a guy back in the shop that built it. And he's like, well, what about this one? It's like, this doesn't say John Deere on it. He's like, oh, no, you're not going to find that stuff. We had to fabricate that in our shop. And I remember Dan's wife goes, well, maybe you guys can do this. Because it's like, okay, here's this big industry that everything's custom.
Yeah. And I laugh when I think about, you see folks who get out of the industry and try and sell a turnkey, in quotes, hops operation. But to your point, there are not a lot of brand names on anything in that turnkey hops operation.
No, you might have a Wolf harvester. Mm-hmm. And a baler, or you might have a Case or New Holland tractor, and you may have some other esoteric pieces of equipment of people you've never heard of, but they're actually full on fabricated by an actual company. Then you will have loads and loads and loads of other stuff that was built on site, purpose built for whatever it is that you need to do.
Well, one of the first things you said was baler. We made our own baler.
Yep. I looked at it. I'm like, you want $25,000 for a hydraulic baler? No, I can buy those pieces parts for about $3,000. And I did.
Yep.
And voila, baler. And same, you know, you want to move hops from here to there, build a conveyor belt. Well, what did I build them out of? I build ours out of wood because I'm like, there's no reason they need to be built out of steel. They don't need to be that strong. So they're built out of wood. And he's like, you can build conveyor belts out of wood? I'm like, yeah. I mean, gold mining. I mean, we did it for hundreds and hundreds of years. You absolutely can do it. And plus, because I had the wood laying around, so why go buy new stuff when I can use what I've already got?
Yeah, you have that eye, though. You can look around at the crap. And I know you love going to the salvage yard.
Oh, yeah.
You can look around and go, huh, A plus B plus C plus D equals E. Okay, yeah, let's go. That takes experience.
It does, and that's what I'd love to do, but I couldn't pick up your saxophone and play it.
No.
Right? Because I don't have that experience. And that's not where my skill set lies. This is where my skill set lies. And what I'm saying is, not everybody's going to be drawn to be that deeply engaged with that fabric cobbling, but there's at least some basic skill sets there that will take whatever it is that you're doing at your hop yard and move it up an order of magnitude mm-hmm. in terms of your flexibility and your ability to rely solely upon yourself.
Sure. I'm looking forward to my welding lesson.
You bet. There'll be pictures. Telescopes do not make appropriate defense weapons against black bears.